D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 383, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Jorge Hernandez from 123computerrepair.com. Welcome to the show, Jorge.
Thank you, Jeff. Always a pleasure being back. So we're ready to roll here.
Sounds good. And I know we were talking a little bit before that kind of the subject, I think, for today is going to be getting started in your computer repair business. And you were going to kind of tell a story on how you got started with yours, and we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, I think I just want to go over some, you know, a lot of people get the idea that starting a business or getting involved in starting your own business really involves a lot. And indeed, it's simpler than what you think. If I was going to start my business today, I will cover a full year with $200. And I'm going to explain to you what I mean by that. There's an unofficial way how you can do business and the official way how you can do business. Okay.
Okay.
The official way is you go out, you register your business, you get your licenses, you get your permit, you get insurance, and you spend a lot of money that you don't even know if you're going to need it or not. Okay.
Right.
And when I say need it or not, I'm talking about the insurance and all those things. When you start a, computer repair business, the unofficial way, the way how I will do it today, and let's go back to the $200 expense that I mentioned it. I will spend $100 in what I call advertising material, and that will include business cards and flyers.
Okay.
And when I say business cards and flyers, I'm talking about you can get a case of $5,000 business cards for a pretty decent price, you know, $50, right. $60, $70. And you can get a case of flyers for $40, $50. Okay. So $100 in advertising material. And you can look it up on the web. In my case, I have local contact people that I deal with. I just send them the advertising material that I want to print on my business card and on the flyers. They print it out. I pay. Boom. I have a big box of business cards and flyers. So that will cover my personal advertising approach. I will go around to, houses, residential communities, business areas, and start, introducing myself. I come in with business card, with a flyer. It just spread the word little by little. I will spend $60 on a simple website. And in my case, I pay $29 every 6 months for my website. My website covers a single domain, which is all that I need.
Right.
Plus 100 email accounts with a 2 gig limit for each account. And I don't need that much because
right.
I do my own archiving and, you know, all the things that we know about email management. So far we have $160 there. Okay. That $100 in advertising material and $60 on the website for a full year. And the additional $40, I will spend it on the big, large car magnets you can buy via Vistaprint or any other
right.
local printing company. And when I say $40, I've been looking at the prices that Vistaprint has, and that's about the price that you will pay for the real large magnets that you put on the side doors in your car.
Right. Yep.
So $40 on the magnets, $60 on the website, and $100 on business cards and flyers. That's how I will start my unofficial business if I were to do it all over again today.
Okay. Yep.
Now, when I say the unofficial way, I'm saying the unofficial way because there's a reason for that. Okay. You can go out and get business and people can pay you via your name. They can pay you cash. Let's call it the under the table approach, okay? and this is only so that you can get started. Once you see that your business is starting to move forward and you're getting clients and calls are becoming recurring, then you have to then think about the official way. And when I say the official way is, especially when you're dealing with business accounts. Business accounts, they don't like to deal with individuals that are not registered as a company because they don't want to deal with 1099 forms and right. all this paperwork and all this thing. So that's the key flag when you have to become a legitimate business and you have to, you know, go through the legal process of registering your company and make sure that you have an official register name in your state, and you have to go and get the city permit and county permit, and then, you know, that's the official way. Once you're officially, then you can open your business account, you can go and start doing business, and people can start paying under your company name and not your name. And that's pretty much how I will start everything if I were to do it all over again.
Okay.
Now, let me explain you how I did it before, because it's a very different approach than what I just told you. Okay. And this is all based on experience, I guess, because we all learn as we move forward in this business. I started my business the official way. First, I register a DBA. It's a doing business as. And I was able to get paid with the DBA name that I registered before.
Right. Okay.
And I decided to do my own accounting. And, you know, I said, no, I'm Superman. I'm the superhero. I'm going to do it all. And, okay, tax season came. I got the, the TurboTax or whatever.
Right.
Tax package accounting you can buy at a local store. I did my own individual tax, income tax return. I did the company income tax return. And fine, I was the hero. I spent $39 on the software. And I was, life was, everything was beautiful. Until I receive a letter from the IRS. Mr. Hernandez, you made a mistake on your income tax return. You owe $4,500. So, you know, I learned the lesson the hard way.
Right.
Get an accountant.
Yeah.
And getting an accountant is so easy. You can get somebody that can, you know, take control of your books, and for $50 a month, you know, just look it up on the website. Look up who your local accountants are. Maybe a friend can tell you of a friend that is an accountant, and they can do your books for you. You know, in my case, I use Dropbox, and I have a folder that I share with my accountant. I post all my transactions in that folder for every year, for every month, and that's how she gathers all the information that she needs from my business, whether, you know, all the sales, all the expenses, anything that is hitting my business, my checking account, my business account, it's posted there. So the accountant know what I'm doing. She gets a copy of my bank statements every single month also. And she sends me a monthly bill, and I pay it off, and that's it. At the end of the year, she does all the tax returns. I pay it, and that's it. So you really have to think about, don't work harder, just work smarter.
Right.
And, you know, going back in time, I think I mentioned that I started my business back in 2009 officially, okay? Because
right.
I've been doing a lot of on the side work with since I got involved in computers. So the official way for me, it was hard to do it on my own. I got penalized for doing it on my own. And now I just let the accountant do it all. I don't get involved with anything that has to do with the only thing that I do on my own is really get the local permits for the city and for the county. But if I get a copy of it, I just send it to her, and it's on her file, and she knows that I'm legally with my permit. So I let her do all the reconciliation and all the banking stuff and any recommendations that she can get me, you know, or hey, you got to start paying payroll taxes now, so let's put somebody on payroll and things like that. So
okay.
She knows when it's time to do things the legal way. So being official means you got to do things the right way.
Let me ask you a question about the, now is the permits, is that something that's in Florida that you have to have in order to operate your business?
Well, here in Florida, and the way how I understand, and I think this is a U.S. policy, if you do business in a city, you have to have a city permit, and you have to have a county permit also. In my case, I'm in Coconut Creek, Florida, Coconut Creek City. I have to have a permit with the city of Coconut Creek, but Coconut Creek is part of Broward County, which is a county, one of the many counties in the state of Florida.
Okay.
So I have to have a permit from the county also. That means that my business is physically located in the city of Coconut Creek, but the city of Coconut Creek is part of Broward County. So I have to have both of those permits.
Okay. I was going to say, so I would say that that's dependent on the area, because I don't actually have to have any permits to operate a business in my city or county. I'm here in Canton, Michigan. So, the way I started my business was similar. I basically had started working on family and friends' computers, and as I was working on my own, and they would kind of pay me a little bit of money here or there or whatever. I really didn't even do any business cards or anything like that. It wasn't until 2010 that I decided, well, I've been working on this stuff for long enough, I should be able to maybe make some money at it. And so I thought, all right, well, let me see. So I'm kind of a thorough guy when it comes to setting things up. In sometimes to a fault, because I would spend so much time setting things up and no time doing the work that nothing would get done. But anyways, I digress. So basically what I did was I looked up on my, on a Michigan website and how to incorporate myself into an LLC. I did all the paperwork myself. It cost me like $50 and I was filing fees and everything. It was very cheap. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to use anything like LegalZoom, which would have cost me, I think when I checked into them, was like $300+. So I did it for $50. I went VistaPrint. I got my business cards. I think I got some car magnets. Trying to think what else I got. And all this stuff was stuff that I had, like the business cards and stuff is stuff I designed myself.
Yes.
I just went on, you could use Paint, you could use, you know, whatever, any of those types of programs, Inkscape, stuff like that. And I just made had my daughter kind of help me, and I made a design and just kind of put my information on there. That was my first not only logo for my website, but also for my business cards. And then, you know, I did create a website, and I use a TechSite Builder 1, which was basically an HTML static one page landing page website. That's it.
And yeah, I bought the product from Steve back in the old days.
Okay,
I never had a chance to implement it, but I really liked it because it's very straightforward. You have your big phone number in your face and, you know, a picture of yourself or your shop. I mean, it's pretty simple.
And it was very easy for me to follow along with the videos because I knew nothing about web design and actually put that together. So that's in now they've got TechSite Builder 2 is out, and that's basically similar to the same thing, except it's a, and I just changed mine over this year. It's a WordPress website. So nice. I still use the same host that I have, but I was able to make my website a little bit better, a little more engaging. My landing page is still very simple, non-scrolling. Everything you see on the front page is all you see. If you want more information, you can click on the pages. And then I want to add a blog and stuff to that too. So we can go into that another time. But anyway, so that's what I did. I started with a website, very inexpensive. I can't remember what I spent for Tech Site Builder. It was $60 or something like that. It was very, very inexpensive.
Very inexpensive, I know, yeah.
So I did that, and then, the other thing I did was I started with Google AdWords. And yes. I was following Steve's advice from Tech Site Builder of basically getting my name out there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do any really traditional type of advertising. So I used a Google AdWords, which I had to pay for per click every time somebody clicked on the AdWord or on the ad to come to my website.
Yes.
And even to this day, it has worked. It has been beneficial for me because it has brought me all my clientele, no matter where I've lived.
Nice.
And I've always been able to pay for it, you know. It's paid for itself, most definitely.
And how far do you go on your coverage? Like 10 miles radios? Or?
No, actually, I've got mine. I used to go a little bit farther. Mm-hmm. Where I'm at now, I do a 6x6 mile square mile radius.
Nice. Okay. So that's fair. That's fine.
I stay in my hometown because yes. I want to be the local Canton computer guy. That's mm-hmm. that's who I am. Yeah. I do go, you know, I go a little bit north into Plymouth, you know, sometimes because obviously when you have business, family members don't all live in the local mm-hmm. area. But as long as it's fairly close within 6 miles or so, yes. I'm fine with that. I can travel and do that.
That's fine.
I'm like you. I still have a full-time job, so that takes a good mm-hmm. portion of most of my days, except for the weekends.
Yes.
So that's kind of what I did. I got started with that, and that started bringing me clients, and I started just fixing computers. And it's one of those things where you just have to do it. You know, I was doing things I'd never done before. You were chatting before the show, and mm-hmm. You're telling me about how you'd heard, you know, I was good at taking apart laptops, and we were talking about how we started with that. And I'm like going, yeah, the first ones, it would take me, this is no lie. It would take me to do a power jack repair on a laptop where I had to desolder and solder it.
Let me guess, 4 or 6 hours?
6 hours. It would take me 6 hours to do because I'm trying to be so delicate and not wanting to burn anything. And anyway, so I just went and did it and finally figured out how to do it properly. Got the right equipment. But I was telling you that I used a $20, Radio Shack soldering iron with, you know, the cheap flux and the, you know, it worked once I was able to heat it up enough, you know, now mm-hmm. I have a hot air workstation and all that, but that's stuff that you don't need right from the beginning. You basically need something to get your business presence out there. Now, yes. I would suggest depending on where you're at, if you could get an LLC, I mm-hmm. would do that. And I'll tell you a little side story what happened because we were doing a web search today. And my wife noticed that there was another TechNut LLC out there. Well, mine's TechNut, no space, LLC. There's mm-hmm. this Tech space Nut LLC.
Mm.
And so when I looked at it, I finally figured out what happened. Because I went and got my LLC, I got the name TechNut because it was available at the time. This other company had been in business for over 20 years, and they were a TechNut electronics shop.
Wow.
They didn't have their LLC. So what happens is I had already gotten the name TechNut LLC, and there's nothing anybody could do about it at that point. They had to get the Tech Space Nut LLC. Because they got it after me.
Oh my God.
So
that's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So that's just something for you to be aware of. You know, I would say the $50, in my opinion, is worth it.
It's worth it. You know, yes.
And the other thing that will do is once I got my LLC, which I was able to, like I said, everything I filled out, sent in, I think some of it I had to send in snail mail with signed, you know, copies and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You can go online. Once that paperwork's done, you can go online that day to the IRS and get an EIN number.
Yes, I have that. Yes.
And that EIN number, what it will do is you can go to your bank and you can mm-hmm. get a business banking account at that point with that EIN yes. number. So you yes. can get started with keeping your finances separate right from the beginning, not having your personal mix with your business. And I highly suggest that because it can get too muddy trying to swap everything over.
Yeah, I don't mix my business accounts with my personal account. You know, everything is separate. My business account pays for ABC expenses,
right,
and my personal account pays for whatever other expenses, personal, but business and personal, don't mix it because you're going to get in trouble.
Yep. Yeah. You don't want to, you know, it's no fun to sit there and move a bunch of money around and try to figure out, oh, hey, was that a business expense? Oh, or wasn't it? Or, oh yeah, I'm not sure. And it gets very, very confusing.
It gets complicated. Yep. Yes. The other thing is, like, you know, when you go out and you start your own business, let me see if I can show you all the inventory stuff that I have here. I don't know if you see all these boxes here on the floor here.
Okay.
You see all these boxes here?
Yep.
I went out and spent money like crazy buying hard drives, power supplies, memory cards, and all these kinds of tools that I say, I'm going to be the best computer guy in town, and I'm going to have everything available so that I don't have to go around and waste time and go to the computer store. Never use it.
Right.
So don't go out and spend money that you don't have. You're starting your business. You know, if you go to a residential customer and you find out that they need a memory card, just go out to the local computer store. What is it going to take you? 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Get what you need, come back, install it, and boom, you're done.
Right.
If you start, I don't stock up any inventory. If you start building up your inventory and spending money, and you're just going to throw money out the drain because you're wasting money.
Right.
And in my case, I bought a lot of memory cards that I have not used, which are outdated now, so I'm stuck with it. So I can try to resell it or eBay or something like that, but it's just a lot of work. So I go inside, I see what's wrong. Okay, we need a new router. Boom, go to the store, get the router, come back, set it up. That's it. You're done. But you don't have to stock up on a lot of things. And by the way, all those things, they sit on the trunk of my car. So, you know, it's like I'm wasting more fuel with this heavy load of on my car than all the money that I'm making by having all the spare parts available. So, you know, again, I haven't used it. I spent a lot of money, so I just wasted time in there. So
that's
not
a
good approach.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of one of the other things that I did too is I went to Home Depot and I got myself a tool case, and it was like $20, but it was one of those nice metal ones with the you know, the clasps on it, you know, heavy duty, so I could knock it around and stuff. And like I said, it was like $20. My kids laugh because every time I go out of the house, they say it's my assassin case, but whatever. like, okay. But the other thing I did was I needed tools, I would buy the tools. Now, what I did initially, I bought a small screwdriver set, which you can get at like a Micro Center or electronics store or whatever. They're very inexpensive. I got a little bit better one with the nice black tips so they wouldn't wear out, because and I'm still using those today. And then I got me a regular size screwdrivers, and I got me some soft handled. I got some soft handled ones, and I can't remember the name of the company. It's a German company. Very good screwdrivers, again, very heavy duty. And I knew if I was going to be turning a lot of screws with them, they would last me a long time. All the other things that I got for testing cables and wire cutters and, you know, all these different types of things that I would need down the road, I bought them as I needed. So if I was going out to work on a network job, I would go, oh, I need some network stuff. And I had some spare cables, and I would buy some, you know, some network, some Cat5 ends, you know, for the networking cables and all that kind of stuff. I just bought them as I needed them.
Yes.
And then slowly over time, I would build up a lot of stuff that I, you know, that you're right. Even if I would have bought it all in the beginning, most of the stuff I still do not use a whole lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have, you know, and if you ever build computers and stuff like that, which is what I was doing for a long time, you have a big assortment of screws and you know, connections and cables. Yes. And you can put all those in your toolkit and have them readily available where you're not going out and spending money. A lot of those things were free.
Yes.
You know, or, you know, I bought it with something else, so I already had it. There's no reason to use a lot of the things that you already have available to you.
The toolkit, I will definitely recommend, you know, when you're starting out, go get a cheap one, you know, $15, $20, that's affordable, that's fine, and you're going to need it because whether you're dealing with laptops or computers and removing parts, you are definitely going to need it. And the other thing that I would recommend you get is a small USB drive because you're going to be backing up customers' data, so you have to put it somewhere and then put it back again. So, you know, a little set of screwdrivers and a USB drive, that's a must.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people get, you know, they'll get the Torx bits and stuff like that. It was years later before I ever started taking stuff apart that I needed actual Torx bits, you know, and I bought a nice little inexpensive set. But there's a lot of tools that you'll have that will sit around that, you know, like I said, I used a $20 Radio Shack. It might have not even been 20, it might have been a $10 Radio Shack soldering iron. It was cheap.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's, starting out, it's, you really have to, you know, get to know all the tricks. And, you know, that's pretty much why this show is so critical. And, because you and I are having a conversation here just on things that we both went through.
Right.
And a lot of people that are probably listening to the show and starting out now, they say, you know, good tip. Yeah. And that's why we need, you know, to have, a lot of people. Sometimes people think that coming into the show, you really have to know a lot of stuff. You don't, you know, we're just talking here. And sometimes people feel shy and, you know, oh, I don't want to go into the show. I feel intimidated. No, come on. I mean, you make people feel comfortable. So, you know, it's just having a one-to-one conversation here. And that's pretty awesome that we have this tool available because back in the old days, you know, back when the internet was invented, back in 1995,
right?
We didn't have this podcast, you know, and things like that. So it's awesome that we have all these tools and all this community that, you know, can give us some feedback on which route to take. And in my case, I'm not talking about setting up a shop or a storefront. I'm talking about running a home-based business. Right. So I need to clarify that.
Right. Absolutely.
One thing that I also need to emphasize is when you're starting out, you think that you're going to be working 24/7 and you're going to be available at 3 o'clock in the morning. Do me a favor. Don't do yourself a favor and don't promote your business as a 24/7 business because you're not going to be able to comply with that. Okay.
Right.
You're not going to go running out at 3 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning to a customer site just because they're having the printer problem. So, you know, be reasonable. Make sure that you take care of your family first. I know that sometimes money is tight and we got to set up priorities on our economical meeting, our economical needs. But, you know, when it comes to family, family comes first and you really have to set aside your business from your family because it will interfere if you get involved heavily on your business only. In my case, I can give you an example. Sometimes I have days that I come from work. I come from work at 6 o'clock, have dinner, take a shower, and at 7:30, I sit down in my computer room to work on things that I need to work. I don't go to my room until probably 1 o'clock in the morning. I didn't get a chance to talk to my wife. I didn't get a chance to have a conversation with my kids. So that really affects, you know, your family.
Right.
And you really have to take care of that first. Family comes first, at least in my case.
No, I definitely agree with that. Sometimes when you're starting these things out, they can take a lot of time to get things set up, but you need, I think you said it best, you need to segment your time and you need to make sure that you're you know, available during your off hours. You know, maybe you're not watching a sports game or playing a video game, you know, in my case, but you're doing something to further along your business and, you know, whatever your goals and dreams are for that. But you definitely have to separate it from the family stuff. And you cannot work a job, you know, and work a computer repair business and do all these other things. You have to pick and choose.
You're going to get burned. So, I mean, it really, in my case, I was also running my business on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, I stopped doing that unless it's a real emergency and only for business accounts. I'm doing it on the weekend because it's, and I think I mentioned this on the previous show, it's a, you know, overtime rate that you charge on the weekends.
Right.
And, you know, if customers don't have a problem paying those rates, then I don't have any problem working. So, but you really have to set up your priorities.
And I think the other thing too, I think the businesses might vary out there. I know like for yours, you travel out and you go to people's residences and businesses. For myself, most of my customers actually come to my door, which I'm comfortable with. Not a lot of people are, and that's fine. So when they bring me a computer, as a matter of fact, we're doing this podcast right now. On my right-hand side, I have a laptop that I'm, you know, doing a virus removal and tune-up on. You know, I'm able to kill two birds with one stone. As soon as I'm done here, I'm going to go talk to my wife a little bit, and that thing's still going to run, and, you know, the podcast is done. And so when you prioritize your time, it also depends on what type of business you're doing. The reason I like business in my home is because I don't have to travel anywhere. And then I can multitask. I can have several machines going at once. I'm not having to sit there and watch them. You know, it's like watching paint dry or grass grow.
Yes.
Very boring. And what you'll learn over time too, I think, is another thing I would suggest is, and I'm not 100% good at this, I'm working on it, is get a some sort of a priority or some sort of a list of how a process list of how you're going to do certain things. So when you're doing a virus removal or anything like that, you can make it the same process every time. And obviously you might change that process over time as different tools come out or using different things.
Yes.
What I found out though is in my virus removals, when I was doing them, I was really, 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 really thorough, which is good. But I think I was getting to the point where apparently I was getting so good at it that there was a lot of things that I was doing that were yielding no results. So I had already cleaned the computer. The computer was clean, ready to go back to the customer. And I'm doing other things to make, double, triple, quadruple check instead of being firm in my process that I've gotten everything out of there and it's running the way it needs to be.
There are so many extra things that you can do once you do a virus removal. You can proceed with a Windows update. You can do a registry cleanup. You can patch the computer, Adobe Flash, Java, and all those things. But how far do you want to go and how much time you're going to spend? It's all back to money.
Yep.
So if you're going to spend 1 hour doing a virus removal and 3 hours doing the updates, it's not worth it.
Well, and that's where, sometimes a process. So I just reloaded it. This is a different machine. I reloaded a computer today because the hard drive was dying. And my process is actually really quick. And, I was too lazy to grab my USB stick with Windows 7 on it, which I could have done. I just grabbed this. I grabbed the DVD and I threw that in the machine. It loaded Windows up. I put the code in there. It was done. I used WSUS on an external drive that I have. I plugged that in. I got the initial drivers using
Driver Max?
No, not Driver Max. It's an older one.
Okay.
They made one. I can't. They've had a couple iterations of it. But I'll find it and put it in the show notes. But the driver disk or the driver portion that's on a hard drive, I loaded the initial, just the normal drivers, Ethernet drivers, chipset drivers, things that because it's a couple year old computer. And so those things are still relevant. And then I did all the WSUS updates, all the Windows updates. Using the external hard drive that I update once a month.
Yep.
And so everything was on there. I had to go to Windows Update, check a couple things because it had been a couple weeks since I had updated it.
And that's it.
And I was done. Yep. It was fast. And so then I was able to go to, you know, Nynite.com and download, you know, your Adobe, your, you know, Java, .NET, you know, Silverlight, all that kind of stuff. Things that people use on their computers for, you know.
Yep. In my case, what I do is I have a standard image, you know, Windows 7 Pro, Windows 7 Home, with all those updates already installed, plus all the additional initial critical software. Whoops, sorry, I think my dog is.
That's all right.
all the initial software that customers may need, you know, Adobe, Security Essentials, Flash, Java, and all those things. I just load the image from the computer, and then I just go through the driver's update process, and I'm done in, you know, in an hour or so. So it's pretty handy.
So what type of program do you use for keeping that up to date?
For the image, well, for I use Patch My PC.
Okay.
Which is you just go to a website, run it, and it tells you what needs to be updated.
Okay.
You click run and boom, boom, boom. 10, 15 minutes later, you're updated. And for cloning, I use the ESOS to do backup, which is free. So, okay. I mean, it's a very, very good, reliable tool that I've been using. And I think I mentioned it also has email notifications in case if you need to, you know, set up some alerts. Like in my case, I use a different approach than you because I don't have customers coming into my doors. What I do is I'm getting more involved in providing remote support to my customers, especially business accounts. I have maintenance plans that I offer to my business accounts, and I have a couple of those on the monthly basis. I remote into their systems. I do, you know, monthly maintenance work on their computers, and they pay me on a monthly basis. And any other customers are having problems, I remote in. I only go on site only when it's extremely necessary to go. So it all depends on. If you have your customers coming in, that's cool because you don't have to drive around.
Right, exactly.
And if you have your customers with remote support, you don't have to drive around either. Right. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation when, you know, you're dealing with your customers coming on site and I'm dealing with my customers remotely. So that's pretty much a approach that people need to take. The other thing that I needed to mention is, and we can talk about, you know, a bunch of other stuff, is you just need to go out and get customers. When I say go out and get customers, what I'm saying is just go out and spread the word, you know?
Right.
In my case, my website is built on WordPress. I'm not a WordPress guy. I just Google it. I figure out how to set it up. And you can set up a plain vanilla WordPress website very easily. It's easy to do as long as you follow the instructions. Once you have your website, two things that I did is, number one is I went and I set up a Google Places. I think,
yes.
Let me see. I think now it's called Google My Business or something like that.
Yeah, they just changed the name of it. Yep.
Yeah, it's called Google My Business, and it was formerly known as Google Places. And I'm going to put your link here on the notes so that you can have
it. Okay, great.
The idea is that you go there and you set up some sort of presence on your website. So if somebody is, for example, because this is what people will do, they will just go into Google and they will type computer repair business. And as soon as they do that, once you register with Google Places, you are officially on the Google Maps portal or on the search. So this is not Google AdWords. This is just the plain Google search via Maps. Or, you know, when you just go, when you open Google and you type computer repair, you're going to show up on the map. And the other thing is the Bing. It's the Microsoft Bing Ads, which is also called the Microsoft Yahoo Network. And I'll send you a link for this also. so that you can have it. All you have to do is register with this site, and it's free.
Right.
And you have your own site, your website presence on the web when it comes to local searches in your area. So that's something to keep in mind, because for me, every time I ask somebody, how do you hear about me? Oh, I just Google it. And I'm not using Google AdWords. I'm not right. paying for Bing ads or Yahoo ads or anything like that. It's just local search.
Right.
So that's something that people can use as an initial tool so that they can, you know,
absolutely.
Get some presence on the web.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, they're free. So you can set
they're
it
free.
Up. The only thing you need to be aware of is when you do them, they're going to want to make sure that your whatever address you're using for your business
is
official. So what they're going to do is they're going to send you in the mail, snail mail, a little postcard
yes.
with a number. And then mm-hmm. once you log in with that number, it usually takes about 10 to 15 days to get it. Then mm-hmm. they'll bring your presence up on the web. And it's mm-hmm. great. It's where it really counts, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, when you do a search that says computer repair near me,
mm-hmm.
if you are within a certain mile radius of wherever your business is at and people are searching in that area, they're going to find, you're going to come up on the Google Maps and your Google Places is going to come up.
Yes.
Now, and the other nice thing is on Google Maps, because I've done Google Places, when you go to do a Google Maps to my house, mm-hmm. over the top of my house, it says Technut LLC,
yes.
which is my business name.
Yes.
And then what I've even done is on my website, this gets a little more complicated, but what I figured out what to do is when you go to my website and you want driving directions, you mm-hmm. click on the map because it's just going to show you a broad view. It takes you down to a closer view, shows mm-hmm. you where my house is. And comes in the drop-down menu on the left-hand side, has a picture of me, has my business name.
Yep.
And then all the person has to do is type in their directions and
that's it.
Hit the button, boom, and they yep. can find driving directions right to my house.
And you can put pictures of your business. You can put pictures of computers that you have work on, laptops in
right.
your case, you know, opening laptops, videos, any flyers or any promotional material that you may have. You can also do it there. So, I mean, it's a pretty good free tool that people can take advantage of it. So why not? You know, just take advantage of it.
And I think that's good because there's a lot of things we talked about that you can get started for low to no cost.
Yes.
And I think that's the importance of the biggest thing is just start fixing computers. And I think that's mm-hmm. what we're saying. And we're giving a lot of good tips on different things that have worked for us. And there's two ways to learn, in my opinion. You can either learn from your own experiences, which is a tool, or you can learn from other people's experiences, which to me is a better tool. Because
I'll give you an example how you learn, because when I went to college, you know, in college you read a lot of books
mm-hmm.
and zero experience. Okay, you gain the experience after you're done if you're lucky.
Right.
So in my case, my experience came after I graduated from college. Okay, so I had computer science degree, no experience. Who's going to hire me? Nobody. So I say, fine. I went out and I got my MCSC certification, which I paid via my credit card. I paid it in 3 years, but it was worth it. And that's how I gained the experience. When I was in the first course of the MCSC, we had to set up a server and we had to configure the network card. And I didn't know how to set up a network card, and I didn't know that there were drivers that you needed to install, and I was following the book, and okay, you right-click on network, and you go properties, say, I don't see this here, I don't see that. And then you realize, my God, how easily it is that how to install a network card, how to install the driver, and then you get access to the network card setting. So, but we don't know that until we gain the experience. So
right.
for me, I mean, I have the knowledge, I have the certification, I have the experience now because I've been exposed to this business for so many years, and that's what really counts. Once you have those tools under your belt, then all you have to do is go out and get customers, and voila, exactly. You're in business. So, I mean, just go out and do it. And a lot of people ask me, how do you land business accounts? You know, my first business account was a referral from a personal friend of mine. You know, he said, I know this guy, he has a store that he needs some computer help. You just go out there, you do your job, and that's your first business account. And then other business account will follow based on referrals. So don't be afraid, you know, just go out and do it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody starts somewhere. And I think a lot of times word of mouth is the number one way that people get started. If you really go back to think about how you got your, you know, if you're working a day job or whatever, how you got your day job, you know, in any part of your life, I think a lot of times it's really about who you know and who's passing a word of, hey, so-and-so is looking for a job. Hey, there's a job over here, you know? So it's the same in business. It's the same with your computer repair. You just go out there, you start fixing things, and you know, people say, hey, I know this guy, he's really good, and he can help you out in your business. And like you said, that just keeps, that snowballs. And
yes.
It's not one of the things that I necessarily went in searching for how to get into businesses and stuff like that. It just kind of, as you progress along, you become real competent at what you're doing. You're always going to be learning new things, though. You're always going to be stretching yourself a little bit because it doesn't matter how smart you think you are. You're never going to be as smart as you think you are.
Yes. All you have to do is show on site, look around, what kind of help they need. And let me tell you, you'll be surprised how many businesses out there are running their stores or their shops or whatever kind of business they have with one and two computers. These are not multi-million financial institutions. Those companies, they have their own IT department. They don't need a computer guy like us.
Exactly.
The small business, they do need computer guys like us. So who, in my case, I'm getting more involved into business IT consulting. So if I were to do it all over again, I will start with business accounts because that's where the money is. So it's all a matter of which route you want to take. If you don't feel comfortable and with the experience that you have, then you have to start little by little with friends, residential accounts until you feel comfortable that, yeah, I can tackle, I can handle this, I can go on and support this business account. And then that's the approach that you have to take. So get the experience, get confidence, and then go on and get your customers.
And let me go back to something that it just kind of dawned on me. And it was something I was thinking about. We were talking about getting started in computer repair. Do not feel guilty because I did this in my business where I was not good at virus removal. Okay. What I would do is, I had a process and I did it properly, but what I would do is I would back up the person's data almost every time because that was easy to do. Everybody knows, pretty much everybody knows how to do that. I would wipe the machine, start over, put their data back on, put all the Windows updates back on, make sure Adobe and all these different things to make sure that the customer got back a clean machine. The thing is, what you'll learn over time is that takes so much time. Yes. That you'll want to learn how to become good at removing viruses.
Yes.
and there's a process. There's many different processes you can use. A lot of people use different things. You'll learn what works. You know, again, even going from that process of reloading systems, what I did was I would just throw every tool I could think at the computer to make sure that it was super clean. Again, it worked. My customers were happy, okay?
Yep.
But I was spending a lot more time on that product than I actually needed to. So
yes,
I learned to refine my process over time. But do not feel guilty about having to start at square one because everybody had to start there at one point.
And if you're being paid a flat rate, then you really have to be very, very productive on your approach, because the more time you spend, the less money you get. So you really have to think about the steps involved in a virus removal and how much you can fine tune the computer before you go overboard and get $5 an hour on a cleaning job. So just That's be careful true. With that.
Yeah. And you, and again, even going back to price, you know, some of the things I would think about is I would charge $99 to do a power jack repair. And yes. that was desoldering. It was actually taking a laptop all the way down to the motherboard, desoldering, re-putting the, you know, re-soldering the power jack back on, putting the laptop back together. And like I said, it used to take me 6 hours, and for $99, you're getting paid little to nothing.
Was that $15, $14 an hour?
I don't even know if it was ridiculous. You know, by the time you put in advertising and all that stuff, no, it's probably less.
It's not worth it.
Now I can do that same power jack repair, and I came around. I think I charge $125 now. Not much mm-hmm. more than what I did, but it's a job that I can do that I'm really good at. So the other shops are charging $200. I figure $125 is a fair price. I can get it done in about an hour.
Yeah, so, that's good. You know, that's fair.
So that's a big difference between where I started to where I'm at today.
Yeah. Going back to something that you mentioned, cleaning up a computer, getting viruses removed and things like that, the last thing that I want to do on a customer computer is to do a fresh installation, because the time involved in putting everything back is so much mm-hmm. that, trust me, you will never get the computer back 100% the way how the customer had it.
Right.
And I'll give an example. I went to a business account. It's a law office down here in Fort Lauderdale. And I had to work with the secretary there. And this law firm, they are very sophisticated in using email. They use share calendars. They use notes. They use tasks. They use, they sync both email accounts between the owner and the secretary. I've never seen such an interactive outlook
okay.
Involvement. She was having problems with a task. The view or something was not right. So I say, fine, let me see if we can fix this problem. And I click reset view. Oh, my God. She had customized columns and color-coded items, and everything just was reset back to default settings. Oh. And she looked at me like, what did you do? So those are the kind of things that you really have to be extremely careful when you're touching somebody's computer, that be careful and make sure that you understand the consequences of your action, because you're not going to look good, especially when she is the main person, the contact person at that office. So
yes.
Finally, I got the view that she needed. She was happy. Everything was fine. But let me tell you that she looked at me like I was from outer space or ET or something like that. I say, oh my God, it was not a good feeling.
Now, I will tell you, there is a little bit of a difference too between residential and business.
Yes.
A lot of times in businesses, these people will set up their computers to have a workflow or a way that they work, and it works for them, whether it be color coding, tabs, different things in their programs that they use that maybe we, even as technicians or consumers, are not used to using.
Yes.
Most of the time, back when I started in doing residential computer repair, the residents, they pretty much wouldn't care. Even if I reloaded the system, they were kind of happy because it was fresh and it was ready to use. And as long as I had all the updates and everything done, they were perfectly, they looked at it as a fresh start. They're like, hey, my 2-year-old computer runs like it was, like it did, you know, day one when I brought it home from the store. So they were more than happy with that type of service. But yeah, if they use it for business, any type of business, and they're using specific things, you have to be able to, you know, you can Google how to back up certain files to get these programs back to where they were. I know there's people that have talked about, you know, in a business environment, taking pictures of the desktop, which, you know, it's extreme, but, you know, sometimes it's needed. You take pictures of the desktop so you know exactly where all the icons go back.
Yeah, taking pictures or just a simple print screen, you know.
Yeah.
I take print screens of the desktop. I take print screens of the printers.
There you go.
I take print screens of, you know, and business environment. They have network drives that they access data from. I take pictures of their PST files if they have archive files that they are mounted in Outlook. So, I mean, you really have to understand what you're doing. Because a single mistake can cost you a lot of money.
Yes.
So let's see here. I'm looking at my notes. And another thing that you can do for free is, and this is very helpful because I do get a lot of feedback from my customers via email. I use MailChimp for newsletters.
Okay.
And it's free up to... I think it's 500 customers. I don't know exactly. I sent you the link via email.
Yeah, I got it.
Via the chat. It's free. I've been using it for free for probably a year or year and a half. And I'm really going to go ahead and get registered with them because I'm getting to a point where newsletters, when things are slow, I just send a blast out. And an email blast, and I get a lot of response, you know, especially when you're promoting a PC tune-up or a computer analysis for free, and you're selling a backup solution or something like that. So using a newsletter definitely helps. And this site has a bunch of different templates that you can kind of customize it based on your needs. You can set up your own logo and special links for if you use Twitter or Facebook or, you know, any kind of promotion. You can put pictures or links, contact forms, things like that. I mean, a newsletter, it's extremely helpful if you want to keep a presence with your customers. And that's something that I do. I keep all my customers in Google contacts. They all have, most of them. Sometimes it's hard when you go out and you're in a rush and you forget to get an email address, then you have to call them back again. What is your email address? What do you need my email address for? Oh, I just want to put you on your my newsletter so you're informed about my update. I don't need junk. I get a lot of spam emails. So,
right.
You know, you just got to. Normally what I do is I ask them for permission. So, you know, most of them say yes. Sometimes they say no, that's fine. I don't put them on the newsletter. But try to get the email address from your customers and make sure that they are on your newsletter so that they're informed about your promotions and things like that. So that's something else that I use.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and I'll tell you something else that I got right from the beginning was that kind of relates to this. Is I bought the TechNibble computer business kit, and it has a bunch of paperwork and stuff in it, invoicing, receipts, work orders, a bunch of different things in there. Even it's still the Excel spreadsheet that I was using for keeping track of my business and stuff. So, and one of the nice things on there is the invoice that I made, or he made, I went and adjusted a few things. I was able to put my logo on there. I've got a place where the people fill their information out. And one of the required areas is an email address.
Yes.
You know, name, address, email address, phone number, you know, best way to contact them type of thing. And then I take this and I put it into a database. Right now, I just started using Repair Shopper over at repairshopper.com. They give you a free account. And I think it's up to 25 invoices a month. So if you're a small shop and just starting off, it's a great way to check out their software and see if it's going to work. They do have, if in the paid for version, they do have a marketer, which is similar to MailChimp or Constant Contact type thing. And it's what I'm using to send out blast emails to my customers. Here's the thing. It's something I've never done before because I always felt guilty about sending information to people trying to sell them something. Yes. But here's the thing. You're providing a service, you know, and I'll give you a point in check. I just had a person that I fixed a computer for them in 2010. Now, I'm no longer in that area. I hadn't had any contact with them. I hadn't sent any emails or nothing. They called me today. This is 2014.
Yes.
So I must have made such an impression. They had two computers that needed to be wiped, and they had a Mac that needed to be worked on. Now, I regretfully had to tell them I was no longer in the area, and I couldn't do it. But I never kept in contact with my customers, and you need to keep in contact with them and keep your stuff in front of them, because next time, if they haven't used you in a while, next time they might just go to a point where they Google somebody. I think a lot of times that's what happens, is they'll move on to somebody else. If you're constantly sending them, and another thing I just started doing too was actually from Vistaprint, I got thank you cards. And, and what I'm doing is my handwriting is terrible. So my wife is filling out the thank you cards with a little message. I'm going to sign them, and we're going to send them out to the customers after they get a repair job done. Hey, thank you for your business. You know, just a keeping in front of them so that they, you know, so the next time when it's 4 years down the road, they decide, oh, hey, let me, you know, let me call those guys back.
If you do a good service, trust me, customers will come back.
Yep.
I've been through the same experience that you've been through. I have people that they, you know, I officially opened my business in 2009, and I have people calling me that I helped them back in 2009. So, I mean, I say, wow. and you'll be surprised how the newsletters work, because sometimes people lose your contact information until they see that email. Oh, my God, this is Jorge, the computer repair guy. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm glad you sent me that newsletter. I didn't know what I do with your business card. So, boom, it's like, you know, you come back to life. So, you know, they help you with that. So,
absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, I have a customer that the way he keeps in contact with me is that he actually taped my business card to the corner of his laptop. And so that tells me that there are probably people out there that lose business cards or don't have that, you know, like you said, don't have the contact information. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I know. Another thing that I use is, and I know that people, when they open their business, they go out, oh my God, I got to get credit card payments. I got to get the system ready and everything. You're not going to get paid via credit card unless you really want customers to pay you via credit card. In my case, I've been paid via credit card probably 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
And honestly, I don't like it because it takes time for PayPal to process your transaction and hit your bank. So for me, what I did is I went into PayPal, I got registered, and I got the embedded code, which I put on my website, and I put a PayNow link. So if people want to pay via credit card, I just go to my website, let them fill in the information, pay me, and that's it. So I know that there are a lot of different options out there. You can get the reader from Square, I think it is, and put it on your phone, and, you know, but you got to, it's free, of course, and you get, the only thing that you pay is the processing fee, whether it's 2-3%.
Right.
But for me, I don't want to be carrying additional things with me. You know, where did I put the little adapter? Oh, my God, it's in my car. No, I left it in my backpack. Oh, my God, it's not here. So for me, if somebody wants to pay me via a credit card, I send them an email. Here's my link. Go ahead and pay me. Boom, we're done. Or if I'm on site, I use their own computer. I go to my website. I go to the PayNow link. and boom, that's it.
That's a great idea.
And if you look on my website, and of course, I haven't done any work on my website for years, so I have a couple of links there, and PayNow is one of them. That's for the PayPal. And the other thing that I have on my website is any link that refers me to any link on my website that has my email address. I do not send customers to their default email client. You know, sometimes when you click email me or email or something,
right?
If you click on an email link, what I do is I send customers to my contact form site, because honestly, 90% of the customers don't have an email client configured already. So what happened when they click on email or something, it's going to try to open Outlook or whatever email client you're using, and it's going to go nowhere. So in my case, what I do is I just send them to my contact form site, and they just fill in the information, and I get an email notification, and that's pretty much it. So that approach has been worked. And I do the same thing on newsletters. Anytime I send a newsletter, and if my email address is on the newsletter, once they click on the link, it will send them to the contact form site. So, okay. You know, it's just a trick that I use to make sure that I don't lose any customers, that are trying to reach me via email.
Yeah, you're right. I think the best way for a person to contact you is to have a contact form on your website. Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I do is, which is free still, I use a Google Voice number. You know, I got a number from Google in my area code, and that's the number that I've been using. If I lose my cell phone, I can just route the calls to another phone. You know,
right.
I'll borrow my son's cell phone and just route it there until I get a replacement phone or something. So I get a transcript of the messages via email with a Google Voice.
Right.
You get a voice message also, you know, a WAV file. So for me, it's a win-win situation, you know, and it's free, and why not take advantage of it? So, I mean, there are a lot of things that you can do when you are starting out, you know. Just be careful on not going overboard and spending a lot of money, and just take it easy. Take things one step at a time. If you're opening a shop, that's a completely different story.
Right,
I don't think I'm the right person to provide information on that, because I never had a shop. I don't want a shop. I don't need a shop.
Right.
So there's a lot of costs involved in leasing a place. You really have to find the right place, how much money you're going to spend every month, and then you have to figure out how many computers you have to fix in order to cover for the rent, for the phone, and for the internet, and all those things. So you really have to take one step at a time and start, you know, just simple, and then if you want to get complicated, then get complicated, but just take one step at a time.
I agree. Yeah, I definitely think people out there just need to just get started. You can do it, like Jorge has said, for little to no cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just go out there and start fixing machines, you know, and see if you even like it. Because maybe it's something where you go, man, I really don't like doing this. I don't like dealing with people or whatever. You'll find out. And then maybe if you do, you know, continue to grow your business, but grow it over time, and, you know, take time for yourself. Don't just, don't work 24/7. Take time for your family, take time for yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, especially if you're working another job, like Jorge and myself, we work regular jobs and we're able to do this on the side. Now I'm looking to grow my business to eventually get out of my job, but that's a whole nother story. So you can start with nothing and just go, you know, I've heard people say, hey, I started with a screwdriver and that was it, you know, or whatever.
Yes.
But yeah, definitely don't do the whole, I'm going to buy everything now. Do it over time. And I used to justify buying tools by when I was doing a job and I needed a tool for that job. I go, well, this job's going to pay for that tool. And then the next time I do it, I'll have the tool. But yep. I didn't pay for it out of my pocket. My business paid for it.
Your business paid for it, yeah. And the other thing is, if you don't feel comfortable with the experience that you have, go out and, I don't know, offer your services for free at a local computer repair shop or something. You know, I'm studying computers and I want to gain the experience. I'm willing to work for free. Just do it maybe a part-time. Do it in the morning. Do it in the afternoon.
Right.
Do something. You know, if you hear that somebody has a broken computer, then try to go ahead and fix it for free. But you have to have the experience. If you don't have the experience, you get no money. That's it.
Right. And the only way you get that experience is by actually doing the job, because we can sit here and tell you all day long how to do it. And mm-hmm. Google can walk you through the steps, but you know, just do it in a way. And I'll go back and tell my backstory. I don't know if I've ever told this on a podcast before. I might have. Basically the way I originally got started in fixing computers was I had bought a Dell Pentium 2 400 megahertz machine with a nice 17-inch CRT monitor. it was a beautiful machine. Cost me $1,200, and that was on a deal that I got through my work. And I would wait. Tech support used to be in Texas at the time, and I would wait till about 2 o'clock in the morning. And when I had a problem with my computer, I would call the technician out in Texas, and they'd just want to chat because they had nothing to do. So I'd sit there and we'd go through all these command lines and different things. This was back in Windows 98. And he would show me these different command lines. I took little 3x5 cards and just started jotting it down. I mean, this was way before Google and any of that stuff. I'm jotting stuff down on a little 3x5 card, and I kept those in a file. So if I had to do it again, I pulled my 3x5 card out, went in, did the command line stuff, and boom, done. That's how I started working on my own machine, because I figured, hey, worst case scenario is it's my machine that's messed up, not somebody else's. So
I know
that's
a
good way to learn too.
Yep.
Well, Jorge, I think we have covered a whole lot of stuff in this episode, and you have brought a bunch of awesomeness, a bunch of great tips and different things in getting started with your computer repair business. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I appreciate you coming back on the show and sharing with us. It's been great. If people want to get in contact with you, what would be the best way to get in contact with you?
My website is the best way to reach me. You just go there, 123computerrepair.com, and just go to the contact form site, and I'll get an email, and you'll hear back from me. So,
Okay.
I just want to say something, Jeff. I want to shout out to all the computer technicians that are listening to the show, and I want to invite them to come in and participate in the show. I mean, this is our community. So sometimes I know, like I said at the beginning of the show, people feel shy. They don't feel comfortable talking, or they think that people are going to make fun of it. You know what? I don't care. Just come in, have a chat with you. Let's talk about computers, how you started your business, what are you doing, and let's just have a one-to-one conversation and spread the knowledge, because the more we hear from people, the more we all benefit. And this is our community, so we really have to participate. And that's why I want all the people that are listening to the show to come on board. They just have to send you an email, and you make it pretty simple, because you give people a lot of different choices. What time do you want? In the morning, in the afternoon, at night, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I mean, you're pretty flexible on the schedule. So I mean, that's not an excuse. So
and that's one of the things I wanted to do, everything in my power to be able to make this as easy as a process for the community as possible. And like Jorge said, this is our community, and we really want, I've said this from the beginning, and I honestly believe this from being on the show back in the day to now hosting the show. During the whole time, I have learned things from brand new technicians to people that have been in the business 20 plus years. there's always something that can be learned. There's always a tip that I went away with when I was working on a machine. I would go, hey, so-and-so just had this problem and he said this or she said that.
Yes.
Let me go check that out. Because in a lot of times that would save me a lot of time of having to go and search for it myself, which you can do, but it just takes a lot of time. And this is a great way that you know, people can sit down and just chat about computer repair, you know?
And trust me, I've been listening to the Podnuts community since day one. Mm-hmm. And every time you listen to a show, you learn something different.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's always a lot of different tips and tricks that you learn from every different show. So it's not a recurring approach that we take here. Every person that come on board the show here, they're using their own individual tools.
Right.
Tools that you are probably not familiar with it, tools that I'm probably not familiar with it. So we all chip in a little bit. We come in, we spread the knowledge, and we all benefit. So, I mean, let's all get aboard.
I like that. No, that's great. Yeah, definitely. You guys, if you want to send an email, just send it to podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And, you know, we'll get you, I'll communicate with you. We'll get you on the show. I don't bite. At least not very hard. but no, it's just an easy process, and it doesn't matter who you are or how long you've been in the business. Or if you just like working on computers or whatever, if everybody shares their knowledge, we all become better for it. And I think that's the whole point of these types of communities. And that's why I wanted to restart the show back up, because I honestly missed listening to the show on a weekly basis.
Yes.
You know,
me too.
So
I know.
But I'll tell you guys, if you want to find me, you can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, just like I said, email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping in Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Come check out some of the other podcasts on the Podnuts Network, like Android App Addicts. It's now a daily podcast. 5 days a week, each show the perfect length to get you through your daily commute or workout. If you have an Android device and aren't listening to this show, you are missing out. Or if you're interested in remote support, check out the Remote Support Show. If you want to laugh and have a good time hearing about tech, listen to the Geeksters. If you want to learn about Linux, then check out Linux for the Rest of Us. And if you're into all things server-related at work or for fun, check out The Server Show. In the market for a new phone, check out Mobile Dynasty to get all the latest information on your mobile technology. If you're tired of being unhealthy, then check out Health Nuts. Come check out these shows and more over at podnuts.com. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.